Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Paul, offices in New York can open to 75% capacity starting May 15th. How do you anticipate that rollout will take place? Do you expect most companies to simply be back to 75% capacity next Monday?
I definitely don't expect it to be a uniform reentry back into the workplace for, I think, a lot of reasons. First, there is the fear factor that I think a lot of employees have about returning to the workplace after, essentially in many cases up to 14, 15 months of working at home and under the conditions that we've all lived under with COVID and the susceptibility to the disease and everything else that's part of just the ongoing public health crisis. Certainly things are much better now and looking increasingly better as more and more as we move forward on the vaccination front. But there still is, and you can see it, quite a lot of fear out there. I saw a survey that was done by the American Psychological Association a couple of weeks ago, and I think they reported that it was close to 50% of employees are reporting significant concerns about coming back to work. That certainly is one factor. I think another factor is that we've actually, in many cases, gotten quite good at this ability to be able to work remotely. Pre-pandemic, I probably would be speaking to you from my office at work. And instead, just like many other people, I'm doing a bit of a hybrid right now. And some days I find it just works better for me to be able to accomplish things that I need to do on any given day by working remotely. And other days it's better for me to be physically in the office. And I think for a lot of people, their work has that element of flexibility to it. And in many cases, they find that they're actually able to be more productive working at home, and so that in many cases they're not in a rush, and a lot of organizations aren't necessarily in a rush to being able to get people physically back into the workplace, whether it's in an office environment or whatever the arrangement is.
Yeah, and that actually leads me right into my next question. You kind of answered it a little bit, but if you could expand on it and what you're kind of seeing or hearing about various local companies or even, companies nationwide. Has the pandemic revolutionized the workspace? Do you expect a lot of companies will simply adopt the work-from-home style as a more permanent change or at least allow their employees more flexibility?
I definitely think what we've seen during the course of the pandemic, like with probably many other things, but particularly from the work at home and flexible work arrangement side, it has probably accelerated things at least 5, if not 10 years in terms of the direction that we were already heading. It was not, I think, all that long ago when people who would be working virtually or remotely or doing telework, however you want to label it would be doing that more out of necessity. So, for instance, if you had to put together a global team to work on a launch of a new product, and you had people who have to work across multiple continents, you wouldn't be getting everyone together face-to-face to be able to do that work. You would have to work as a virtual team. And so for many types of work, that's kind of how virtual work or telework would often be done. But, you know, through the pandemic, we had this public health situation that required people to be, in many cases, to be working at home, and found that for many jobs and for many people, that actually allows them to be able to be more productive. And especially layered on top of that, the fact that we had schools closed, people couldn't go out. And so you're not only working at home, but you also have, for many people, childcare responsibilities, elder care responsibilities, and it was really out of kind of necessity. I think one reason why we still see a good number of people hesitant, in addition to the fear factor and maybe the fact also that they can be able to be more productive in working at home, is that schools haven't completely reopened either. And I know I see that with our own staff and faculty at UB, that for many people, it has just been really important for them to have the flexibility of being able to do their work at home. So I think flexibility is another important factor here, you know, in addition to the fear factor and the just simple fact that we've gotten a lot better at this. And for many people, the way the work that they do allows them to be able to do much of it, if not all of it, remotely at home.
Are there any statistics to point to better or worse production from employees who work at home compared to an office setting, or is that evidence kind of just anecdotal?
Well, there's been a lot of research looking at both at kind of at the workplace level and also at the team level to identify the conditions in which remote work, telework, and virtual team work functions more effectively. So there is definitely you cannot say that it is good or bad, but what you can say is that there are better and worse ways of going about doing it. So the types of characteristics and things that you find about engagement at the workplace also carry over when you look at engagement for people who are working remotely or through telework or through as part of a virtual team. There has to be ongoing, robust communication. People need to feel personally and psychologically connected to the workplace. They need to feel connected to each other, to the members on their team, particularly to their manager. Those things are naturally more difficult when you are working remotely, because it can be the case of out of sight, out of mind. So effective managers will build in ways of keeping constant communication and touch points with the members of their team when they're working remotely. And that requires additional mindfulness and attentiveness and proactivity above and beyond what you would maybe necessarily have to do in the office environment, where everybody's, you know, working on the, you know, on the same floor in an office building, or you know, in the same complex, and you just naturally see each other over the course of the day. You know, when you're connected through Zoom, of course, it's a different situation. So, you know, scheduling regular meetings, touch points, Even if there isn't kind of a business agenda attached to the purpose of the meeting, having regular check-ins with the people on your team, making sure that people stay connected with each other and that they're all communicating effectively. You know, those are some critical things that are absolutely essential. And there's actually quite a lot of research that's been done both during the pandemic, but, you know, before it as well, that can provide a lot of guidance and direction to employers and to managers and executives on how to be able to make remote working and virtual teams more effective.
Right, and then one of the obvious factors that this all comes down to, at least in my estimation, is money. And companies can probably look at themselves and say, we've done an effective enough job from this remote model that we no longer need to rent office space or pay for that workspace. Is that something that's going to be at the top of the minds of companies moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to see a reduced footprint when it comes to office space requirements and needs. And I think I know that, you know, just speaking with senior leaders around a range of different types of companies, that especially in situations where you have work that does lend itself to remote work. I mean, it's different in a manufacturing setting, of course, where the physical production is taking place at a certain place. You can't rely on kind of remote work for that. But there are lots of jobs, even in the manufacturing organization, that where people, whether they're in research and or in operations, or in marketing and support services, a lot of that work is still happening and I remotely, and I would expect it might take for some time. And I think, to your point, I think one of the considerations is for companies to be rethinking who does need to be actually on site in the office, or in the factory, or whatever the physical setting is. And I think we're going to see a significant decrease in terms of office space allocation and rentals. And again, more, I think the other piece that we'll see is further movement to hybrid forms of working. So you'll have people who will come in maybe 1 or 2 days a week, and instead of having a dedicated office space, they'll have a shared space that they'll, that they'll use with other people. And they'll, whether they have a formal sign-in policy of who uses, a office or a desk and, at a facility, those things that we had started to see before the outbreak of the pandemic, I think we're going to see those types of arrangements with increasing frequency.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.